Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And you know, I thought you were going to be a little bit rougher in that first round of questions.
Oh, it's coming, Tony. Don't worry.
All right.
So why are some of those Italian B wines so expensive? Barolo, Barbaresco, and Brunello.
Ooh. Well, I mean, it's interesting. The why are wines expensive is a great question in general. But it's kind of a funny coincidence that Barolo and Barbaresco, the two great red wines, age-worthy red wines of Piemonte that are most famous, and Brunello, sort of great big beefy Sangiovese from Tuscany, that those wines are all relatively expensive. They're expensive because there's demand for them. They're in places where the wines have been famous for a while, and so the wine pricing is kind of a real estate game. Producing wine is not crazy expensive. I mean, honestly, if you think about the labor steps and the labor you have to pay for, it's going to be dependent upon the price of labor and the culture. Understood.
Mm, sure.
Yeah. The price of oak barrels, if you're using oak aging for some of the wines, that affects it to some extent. The time spent for the material in your cellar for a long time, sometimes for like Brunello Montalcino, is something that people hold back in the cellar, as Barolo and Barbaresco, because those are wines that take some time maturing in the cellar before you can begin to drink them. That makes some sense, but the pricing is really a real estate game. If you had to buy, you know, 4 hectares and that cost you 3 million euros, the reason Napa Cabernet is crazy expensive now,
right,
is because
the land is so valuable.
You have however many Silicon Valley millionaires that want to open, mm-hmm. Bob White's family winery in Napa Valley. Well, Bob White, because he made billions, he can afford the real estate on Rutherford Mountain to buy that ranch.
Right.
But you know what? He's not an idiot businessman, so he's going to try to make it back. He's got to make it back by producing really world-class, first-class stuff. And there's some cost in doing that and hiring the famous consulting winemaker and buying the best Prosecco barrels and having a jazzy tasting room and all that stuff. But that's kind of drop in the bucket compared to the price of the real estate. So if you have heard of the place repeatedly, chances are the real estate is more expensive in the mm-hmm. wine business.
Well, when you
so the price is going to be driven a little bit.
And when you talk about real estate, you know, you think about the Côte de Nuits or the Côte d'Or, and you think about how small those parcels of land are.
Oh, those places in Burgundy. I mean, a Grand Cru vineyard in Burgundy, and they don't come available for sale.
Right.
You know,
It goes from family to family, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Or it's a wild price, and some French insurance company buys it. Or that's half of the classified growth Bordeaux. That's the case. They're owned by some multinational conglomerate.
Okay.
You know, that could afford that real estate, that piece of property. It's a remarkable thing. And so some of the Italian wine names that you know, Amarone della Valpolicella, that's coming up in price. Barolo, Barbaresco, Brunello, Montalcino, it's coming up in price. You'd mentioned Chianti. Chianti is so variable because there's the smaller zones near Florence, the Colli Fiorentini.
Mm-hmm.
There's Chianti Colli Senesi, the hills near Siena, that are really inexpensive wines, have been and always will be. Just nice, gutsy, easy Sangiovese. You have the part of the Chianti Classico that is the heart of the zone that makes remarkable wines. I would say that some of the best values are sort of in the areas where the quality is inconsistent. Some of the best purchases are in those areas. The best Chianti Classico, they age better than Brunello di Montalcino regardless. I think that some of the single vineyard Barolos and Barbarescos are expensive for sure. That they are reasonable purchases compared to some of the French cattle counterparts.
Sure.
The few cult names where the pricing is elevated to a crazy degree because of people prospecting for profits on buying Giacosa or buying Gaia, I would not touch those unless I had unlimited funds.
Let's talk a minute about what does minerality actually mean? Wine is made from fruit, and where is this minute? You know, I think people are confused by the minerality and volcanic and chalk and talking about using these words.
Yeah, people do get the sort of slightly freaked out look on their face when you start talking about what they think it is they're going to drink, and you start referencing things that are not obviously not in the glass.
Right.
You know,
not food words.
Yeah, there's apricot or cinnamon or the volcanic soil, or, you know, it's like, I thought this was like grape juice.
Right.
That had a little booze in it, you know. Right. Well, it is grape juice. It has some booze in it, right?
But it comes from the soil.
Well, yeah, it's where you grow it. I mean, it's kind of what that particular wine nerd is referencing. Like this wine nerd mm-hmm. is referencing the impact of growing those vines in that place. Say in Sicily on Mount Etna, you said volcanic soil. 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 feet up, there are vineyards that are marvelous vineyards that are grown right in the lava flows from, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. And that volcanic soil has a very particular flavor. You can smell it when you're up on the volcano. And the flavor is obvious. Like, I think if you have cherries on a tree in that same site, those cherries are going to be impacted. Well, the vine is something that, especially older vines, where the roots are very, very deep, and the water that travels, the rainfall that falls, all that wine is the rainfall converted by that plant. And that rainfall travels deep into the earth and travels the entire way up that vine through the roots and through the vine itself into the berry. That path it travels, it's impacted the entire way. It's like in your life, you have a million different experiences that impact the what you're going to say and how you say it, right? For that grape, and the many, many, many thousands of grapes or hundreds of thousands of grapes that go into a vat, they're all telling these different stories of the path of the rainfall and the things that it saw along the way. And what it saw along the way was a whole lot of volcanic soil.
Right.
That's a lot of the chatter.
Understand.
So that's the some of the scent rising out of that is going to be that. It's going to be the fruit, but it's going to be the fruit with that the coloring of coming from that soil. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think it's really kind of beautiful the way you just said that, and it really makes perfect sense. One of the other things I think about Italian wine, do you feel the Barolo in particular is a lighter wine, or how would you describe that?
I know people sometimes get confused. People are not always great at using all of their senses analytically to understand what it is that they're tasting. And if someone is thinking, well, Barolo is a lighter wine, I think sometimes that in Italian wine, almost always, especially in the north and in the center of the country, but almost always, even through the south, you have acidity. And the acidity is what keeps it firm on the palate. When you taste wine without food, that acid doesn't have that much of a job to do. When there's good acidity in a wine, when I say good acidity, I mean acidity that has really good function for food, it's going to be firm, and you're going to have to extrapolate what it's going to do with food on the table. Since wine, especially in Italy, is made for the table, it's a funny thing how people will come back from Italy all of a sudden liking Italian wine when they never did before. Well, they had it on the table with the right food the entire time.
Exactly.
So it makes a big difference because
sure
it functions
does.
So well.
Mm-hmm.
That acidity is what balances salt. It's what balances acidity. People love Italian cooking that has tomato in it.
Mm-hmm.
Tomato has very high acidity.
Sure.
And you have to have these things, and you have to have acidity to cut through fat in cooking.
Well, and also, I mean, pasta isn't necessarily fatty, but it almost feels fatty in your mouth in a way.
Well,
but
it will from olive oil, it will from the
mm-hmm.
ragu.
Or cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, all those things need that acidity.
Yeah, let's not pretend that pasta is like the diet food. That's always one of the funny things. I'm
no
having something
there.
Light.
I heard someone say one time about how they had gone to Italy and didn't, you know, drank wine there and didn't get a headache where they might somewhere else. Is there a reason for that? Or
I think I've heard that enough times.
Okay.
And sometimes people are like, well, you know, do they use something different when they ship it or... No, they don't do something different to the wine when they're going to ship it overseas. What happens is I think that we use it differently. In Italy, you're going to have wine with, just like we were talking about, you're going to have wine with food. It's never going to hit the table, and you're not going to sit and drink four glasses of wine at cocktail time.
Right.
You know, when is the last time that you ever went to have, you know, a cocktail, an aperitivo, you know, literally a starter,
mm-hmm.
anywhere in Italy, and they didn't immediately put snacks down with it?
Always. You're always getting an antipasto.
It's always music and dancing. It's not one or the other.
Right.
And there's always something. It's stuzzichini, which means snacks. I think it's one of my favorite terms in Italian.
Yeah, it's a great word.
It's somehow more casual antipasti.
Stuzzichini.
You know? The stuzzichini. Yeah, exactly. Good
that's
accent.
Fun to say.
Good accent, yeah. So that's what you have between meals. It's what you have, I don't know.
So you think the reason they don't get a headache is because they're eating food with the wine.
Right,
and tempering it a bit.
And you know what? How often does dinner take 3 hours or lunch take 3 hours when you're at home?
Right, it
in
doesn't.
In the States, with a schedule.
Right, no. You're eating quickly, so you're not drinking as much. That's what it's coming down
to.
You're
either drinking a sport, okay? Because well, that's your entertainment, okay? Or
drinking
I mean,
is
frankly,
sport.
Frankly, that's we do that. That's like sure. That's like the U.S. fraternity culture or whatever. Come
right,
on,
right, right.
You know, I mean, God bless us, you know, but mm-hmm. it's maybe not the most responsible thing that we do. But if you're sitting and having dinner for 3-4 hours and you're having a rich but not giant meal, and you have several glasses of wine with it, that's reasonable to digest, you know, to ingest that and to not have a bad effect.
Right, have it.
To not have that sure. headache, at the, you know, the next day or...
It, well, food makes a huge difference when you're drinking. And sort of the more of it, the better, quite frankly.
If you have food most of the time and you're drinking
and you're
the wine for
yourself.
2 and 3 times longer than you would be
yeah.
in the States,
mm-hmm.
when you're not in that vacation mentality, then, yeah, you're going to have a different effect. So yeah. I would say that most of it is how we handle ourselves, not the wine. It's not the wine itself.
It's not the wine. Right. I was going to yeah. say there can't be anything different about the wine.
My favorite thing is when someone comes home and they realize that every day, I mean, you know, what do? We try to tell people, enjoy your life. I mean, that's it. Have a better quality of life every day. If dinner takes 2 hours, that's okay. That should be your evening's entertainment. You
well,
know,
it's time to talk and be, you know, and really communicate and be together and share. And I mean, you know, the any loss of that at the time at the table is a loss for the family, I think, greatly.
Yeah. So that's, I think, you know, literally, I think that's just us having a not great quality of life habit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we've talked about some of the regions of Italy. Could you just kind of go over the different regions of Italy and some of the grape varietals that we haven't spoken about yet, just so people kind of have a clear, or maybe just quickly go over all of them just to have a clear understanding?
So all of them, they're 3,300. So
okay, that's too many. That's well,
in an hour radio program, I'm not going to hit them all. I can go really fast, like the auction guys
yeah.
or the disclaimer guys on the insurance commercials. Yeah.
Okay. Can you hit on some of them?
A little quick. So
all right.
Think of the Northwest, the Northeast, the center of the country, and the South.
Okay,
right?
That works.
And the Northwest, the region that's most famous is Piemonte.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and to, things to know in Piemonte, there's a lot more to know, but I'm just going to kind of do like the couple of the basic things to know. In Piemonte, the most important grape for aging wine is Nebbiolo. And Nebbiolo, think of it as being sort of like Pinot Noir that went to the gym. Very aromatic, but really charming fruit. But it's a bit firmer, it's a bit denser, it has more sun. Barolo and Barbaresco, those wines that you had mentioned, are the two most famous ageable wines from that. The everyday wines from that region that are excellent quality very often and very good quality price ratio are Barbera, which is more like snappy crisp, and Dolcetto, which is more like punchy fruity, if that makes sense. And they're mm-hmm. both sort of medium-bodied mm-hmm. reds. So that the little basics of Piemonte. And that is, there are a bunch of other regions in the Northwest, but they're nowhere near as important to
and
know.
And that's such a beautiful region to travel to.
It's much, the cooking is definitely some of my favorite cooking in Italy, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
In the Northeast of the country, there are three regions to know. The Alto Adige for whites. The people from that area will still call it Südtirol, the Tyrolean Alps, the Dolomites. The southern Tyrol, the northern part of the Tyrol is in Austria. The culture is very marked by the long association with the Habsburg Empire. And the whites from there in particular are gorgeous. And there are many grapes, and they all sound like Germanic or Middle European grapes. Pinot Grigio, we had mentioned, is an important one. Gewürztraminer is actually from there and is made in a dry style and is super aromatic and interesting. The Sauvignon Blanc from there is probably the best in Italy. It's a very fresh, sort of fresh, crispy, fruity style. And the reds from there, the one thing to know is that the Pinot Noir that you get from Burgundy is grown on the same parallel in that region and is super charming and relatively good value. So look for Pinot Noirs from the Alto Adige.
Good.
And it's called Pinot Nero in Italian, or you'll see Blauburgunder, which is the romantic Germanic name for Pinot Noir.
Can you spell that one? No.
Yes, I can.
Yes.
B-L-A-U umlaut, B-U-R-G-E-U-N-D-E-R.
Okay.
So the German spelling quiz.
Right. So we have the northeastern part of Italy.
And the third region to know is the Veneto. Mm-hmm. And the Veneto, there is a lot of Pinot Grigio that's not so great in quality, but they'll charge just as much as the region that makes the better stuff. because people will buy Pinot Grigio just because it says Pinot Grigio on the label, which makes me a little sad. Look for the Alto Adige on your Pinot Grigio. And the red wines from there are that are most famous are Valpolicella Classico that we mentioned, Amarone. Mm-hmm. Okay, Amarone is really meant for after dinner or contemplation, or to have with nuts or blue cheese or something. It is a wine that has a little bit of an impression of sweetness that makes it not great with food. It's fun to drink.
It is.
But it's not great with food.
Right. Yeah, it almost has a menthol-y or some sort of unusual.
Yeah, there is a sweetness to it.
Yeah. Hmm.
And then the white to know from that area is Suave Classico. There are excellent producers of Suave Classico. There are lousy ones that keeps the price down. But there's excellent Suave Classico to be had. So that's the Northeast. I think, well, next segment I have to finish your questions when we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. ¶¶